That's good.
I bet Ryan's listening in, though. We're on. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting on the 12th floor of the Capitol today for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. It is approximately 10 a.m. Wednesday, January 15th. And like I said, we're meeting for the first meeting of the new year for 2014. We had a special meeting, actually, on December 30th that we cleared up a whole bunch of business. We do have some important stuff today to go through. I don't have any particular opening comments except for one. I'm looking forward to a NDSU four-peat in 2015. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague. Hey, got to aim for the top.
That's a big prediction. Thank you, Dave.
My only opening comment is you're a couple weeks late on resolutions. Oh. So if, is that kind of borders on being
jinx
a resolution?
Until we won number three. I don't
okay.
want to jinx that all.
No other opening comments.
All right. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Well, I would have two opening comments. One, Randy, you may not have noted this, but this is the first anniversary of our first commission meeting.
Really?
It is, yeah.
Excellent.
I don't know that it was on this exact day, but this is the first meeting of the year. And so I really do enjoy the feeling in my stomach today more than a year ago.
So do I, actually.
Having a better sense of how things work here and the order of the meetings and all of that. And then in conjunction with that, one of the news releases we handed out summarizes the work from the last year. And so I think it's been a very busy year. We cited $1 billion worth of energy-related infrastructure throughout the state in the last year. So it's no wonder that the staff has been very busy and that we've put a lot of miles on traveling around North Dakota because we did a lot of work. I think that everybody's been very focused on doing an efficient, thorough job on each and every application and looking out for the best interests of the citizens of the state and all of them, while also providing really speedy response and for the businesses who are involved in these projects. So I'm really proud of the work that we do here. It's a very orderly, thorough process, very efficient, and I'm looking forward to another very productive year. And maybe the media will have more questions on the news release after the meeting.
Okay.
So those would be my opening comments. Thank you, Commissioner.
Very well. All right, we have a few items on consent. I would move passage of the consent items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Just want to make a note for staff and I guess for anyone else to be interested in. The last item on consent is the hearing cancellation of MDU and the Brook Divide. There was potentially a hearing the commission would be involved in about extending services. That we have a request to cancel that, so apparently Brook Divide and MDU have worked that out. The hearing was scheduled for February 3rd at 9 a.m., so we'll still need to have some type of informal on that. So I'd say as soon as we could get that informal scheduled, I think that'd be great. Sometimes we approve these service area or these extensions without them, but in this case, since there was a potential hearing, I would at least like to hear the sides exactly what was perhaps some of the issues on that. So the sooner we can get that scheduled, the better. Okay, moving to the regular agenda item BK1. I move the commission adopt the consent order and the Public Service Commission Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning Caraz Construction, Inc., case number PU13-187.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. A little background. Caraz Construction is a North Dakota corporation with its principal office in Larimore, North Dakota. Nodak Electric is a North Dakota cooperative with its principal office in Grand Forks, North Dakota. On October 30th of 2013, the commission received a third-party damage complaint from Michael Swanson, a homeowner in the Grand Forks area, that alleged a violation of called for a dig law took place by Caraz during some of the work they were doing. The Public Service Commission staff basically started an investigation. What was unique about this one right off the bat was this is the first time since we've started the enforcement of the call before you dig that we've had a violation filed by an individual citizen. It's usually been the individual that owns the facilities has filed the complaint, if you will. But this was a private citizen that was concerned about it because I suspect it was in their area and it affected their services. But nevertheless, it was the first time, and Julie Prescott of our staff took the lead in doing the staff investigation. Basically, went through, and there's a lot of provisions that can allow someone to not call before you dig if there's an emergency or other things like that. But in Julie's review of it, she determined there was not an emergency taking place. She determined that Carras was performing an excavation as defined by North Dakota Century Code in the area of Grand Forks as part of a project to install water lines for Grand Forks Trail Water District. Staff also determined that the Carras failed to provide excavation location notice within the 48 hours as required by North Dakota Century Code. As I talked about, it was not during a time of emergency. Staff concluded the underground cable owned and operated was owned and operated by NODAC. So Carras was doing the work. It was NODAC's facilities, but the individual, one more time, Michael Swanson actually filed the complaint. So during the discussion with staff, basically the company agreed that they did not follow the law, if you will. And this consent decree today basically says that the company will be fined $1,000 for their violation of North Dakota One Call. Also, the company has paid the full damages to NODAC on approximately $1,005 for damages to its facilities. The max we can fine in this case is $25,000 under the new law. The commission has had a lot of discussion, actually, quite honestly, yesterday about how we're going to look at these going forward, that the range is now $0 to $25,000, where it used to be $0 to $5,000. But we basically, and my colleagues, of course, may chime in, I guess, is that we're not going to look at it any differently on the initial fines. We're going to deal each case specifically, and just because the higher fine is available doesn't mean we're going to initially say we're going to institute those higher fines. We're going to continue the same protocol that we've done before, look at the seriousness, look at paying the damage. In those cases where there is the need for the higher fine, we will certainly have the ability to execute it where we didn't before. I think that's the big thing for me, that this case is, you know, quite honestly, not a lot different than some of the others we've seen. Somebody didn't call before the dig. Somebody hit something. They paid for the damages. Nobody was hurt. It's a protocol we followed before. So I think this is a very good work by Julie on staff. I think it's important to note, though, that the private citizen did file this complaint, so our efforts to get the awareness out there on North Dakota One Call, what individual citizens can do, is certainly out there now. And this, is, I think, is a proof to that. So I look forward to supporting this. And just a little background, since the first fine was issued in the Public Service Commission back in, I think it would have been about 2010, we're now having 27 of these. This will be number 28. Different fines that have been levied anywhere from $0 to $5,000 for companies and individuals violating the Called For You Dig Law. So, concludes my comments. I look forward to the vote.
We have a motion and second. Is there any further discussion?
Just a couple additional comments. This One Call system is so important in today's environment for two reasons. First of all, there's a lot more infrastructure underground with the pipelines, the gathering lines, the electric lines all over the state. There is just a lot more infrastructure to need to protect and be aware of. And secondly, there's a lot more construction. So there's a lot more digging that threatens the infrastructure. So it's encouraging to see private citizens using the system. It's great to have the contractors and a lot of the industry on board with us and working with their members, trying to increase awareness of the importance of this. And it's important for folks to know that they will be fined if they aren't following the law. And I think that's the point of these kind of matters. You know, we're going to be reasonable on first efforts, but when there are multiple offenders, they should expect that we're going to be very serious in how we attempt to bring them on board and into compliance with what we need.
Is there any further discussion?
Just to add one point, that when talking with Julie from staff about one thing the $25,000 has done, I think, is that, and this is more of a perception than we could prove statistically, is the fact that there is a range of $0 to $25,000. The companies seem very, very supportive of consent decrees early on in the discussion to risk opening themselves up to that max violation. So I think that the intent of what we did is certainly is out there now.
Is there any further discussion? And see, none of all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell.
Commissioner, can I go back for 1 second?
Whatever you need.
I know that I just wanted to give you some kudos on the One Call, because that was an issue that you identified early on in your service here. Yep. And really kind of went after, and we're seeing some really great results and much increased public safety as a result of your focus. So good work, and thank you.
A lot of people helped out, but when I got here in 2009 and we had never issued a fine, I'm not out to fine people, but it was seemed odd that we had a law in the books that had never been enforced, and a lot of people supported it, but I'm glad we did what we did back in 2009. So here we are today with this growth in infrastructure that we have a system in place. So thank you. Okay, item BK2. I move the commission issue a notice opportunity for hearing in the application of Great River Energy for a variance of special condition number 4 of route permit number 1 regarding minimum ground clearance of 4 conductor spans along its 400 kV DC line in Burley, Kidder, and McLean counties, case number PU13-900.
Second.
On December of 2013 and January 10th of this year, Great River Energy filed a request for a variance of special condition number 4 of route permit number 1 issued December 17, 1976 for GRE's 400 kV DC line. Specifically, GRE requests a variance to allow the existing clearance of 4 conductor spans that are not less than minimum 35 feet as required by the condition of the order be varied to 34 feet, 31.4 feet, and 34.9 feet, and 34.8 feet for 4 different locations in North Dakota. This is the line that runs from the Coal Creek Station all the way to Minnesota. And what's interesting is that you'll note that this was permit number 1. This was the very first siting that the North Dakota Public Service Commission ever did. So I don't know if Dave was covering the beat back then or not. In talking with Jerry, our staff guru, on this, I kind of had him walk me through it because, you know, the special condition number 4 would have been a provision of our order that said that the span needed to be a minimum of 35 feet. So this was back in 76, and now the NERC standards are 28.1 for this type of line, so they're clearly above that. But what I found was very interesting and reassuring in some ways is that the commission issued this order 38 years ago, and the companies are still making sure that all the conditions of the order are being met. They came back to us and request variances, so it is reassuring to know that the orders have the effect for forever. And as we go through the pipeline siting and as we go through and we continue to beef up pipeline safety and look at response capabilities, when we issue orders for companies to do something, if they don't follow those orders, there is something the commission can do about it. So as we talk about the discussion about when the commission jurisdiction switches to PHMSA in operation, it still begs the question of if there's a siting provision that is issued that the company do A, B, or C, if something happens down the road that they've not done one of those provisions, we do have some ability to enforce. Now, we've never quite honestly exercised that, but it's something that we are, I think, have at our disposal if it needs to come to that point. So I look forward to supporting this. This particular instance, I think, is more of a procedural because they're certainly in compliance with the existing laws, but I do appreciate the company filing this request to make sure they're continuing to keep the provisions of the order in place.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just one thing for perspective. You pointed out that this is permit number 1 from 1976, and for perspective, when this was issued, none of the current commissioners had even graduated high school yet, and the two of you were even pretty far from it.
What year was it?
Tell 76. Me. I was 10. Randy, I was 10. Anything else of substance to add, Commissioner?
Nothing more.
Any further discussion?
Graduate 78, Brian?
No.
Any further discussion? Since not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. All right. That concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. RC1, I move the commission accept the Federal Office of Surface Mining's 2013 evaluation reports for the Coal Regulatory and Abandoned Mine Lands programs.
Second.
The Office of Surface Mining recently issued their evaluation reports for the Coal Regulatory and Abandoned Mine Lands programs for the evaluation year that ended June 30th of 2013. No issues or concerns were raised in either of the reports, and OSM continues to report that the commission has an efficient and successful coal regulatory and AML programs. The following are some excerpts from the regulatory program report. The PSC the PSC continues to administer an efficient and successful coal regulatory program as set forth in the Federal Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act of 1977, and from here on, when I say that, I'm going to say SMACRA. OSM's programmatic reviews of the North Dakota program indicate that the PSC is adhering to the state's policies and procedures regarding opportunities for public participation in all phases of their reclamation program. The third one, 100% of the 24 inspectable units were free of negative off-site impacts during the evaluation year. A fourth comment, the Reclamation Division uses new technology to become more efficient and make information more readily available to the public. The fifth comment, the Office of Surface Mining's Denver Field Division analysis shows that the state program is effective in achieving its goal of having disturbed lands reclaimed to the approved post-mining land use as contemporaneously as practical. And the last comment that I wanted to highlight, in all cases, the Denver Field Division found that the policy memos were consistent with the approved state programs. None of the policy memos reviewed by the Denver Field Division were interpreted as rendering the approved state program less effective than SMACRA requirements. And then I wanted to highlight three excerpts from the Abandoned Mine Land Evaluation Report. Number one, the state administers an excellent AML program in full compliance with their approved AML plan. The Casper Area Office continues to enjoy an excellent working relationship with the staff of North Dakota AML. Their personnel are experienced, knowledgeable, and dedicated to the goals of the program. A second one, the PSC continues to administer an efficient and successful ALL program as set forth in SMACRA. Since the program's inception, the North Dakota AML has conducted over 150 primary reclamation projects, 27 emergency projects, and numerous construction, maintenance, and sinkhole filling projects at a total cost of over $44 million of federal funds. More than 24 miles of dangerous surface mine pits and high walls and over 1,600 acres of underground mine subsidence have been reclaimed. And lastly, the North Dakota PSC maintains a very cost-effective program with 11.3% of the grant dedicated to administrative costs. The remainder of the grant is spent on project design and construction. I really think that the entire state of North Dakota ought to take a lot of pride in the people that work in our reclamation and abandoned mine land divisions, as well as the mining companies that have been supportive of creating this program, that this federal money is coming from the mines, and they're very supportive of paying into that pool and making it possible. And so with that, I recommend the commission accept OSM's 2013 evaluation reports.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'd just like to add a couple comments. This is really an important report. This is the annual review of our state's coal mining industry, employs nearly 20,000 people. So this is really a critical review done by the outside federal agency that we work under in the coal mining and reclamation programs. And it's a really thorough review. It includes off-site impacts, contemporaneous reclamation, reclamation success, customer service, and innovation. So they go through the whole gamut of the program. And some of their conclusions, I think, bear repeating in terms of direct quotes. They say, the NDPSC staff continues to implement the program in a professional, cooperative, and fair manner and have the necessary technical expertise for carrying out its functions to ensure that all of the requirements of SMACRA are met. I think this is really important for citizens to hear and hear again that the Public Service Commission is really holding our mining industry to very high standards to minimize environmental impacts and return that land to productive use as quickly as possible. And we take that really seriously. And according to these federal reviewers, do a very good job of it. So thank you again to all the staff who are responsible for this good report.
Jim, I just want to add the same thing. Just thanks for all your work this last year. You guys have done a really good job. We had the two coal lawsuits that have been completed, the commission was upheld, that everything we did was right. You guys do great work up there. And I think we have to always remember, it transcends back to low-cost electricity. As we pointed out in the press release, $1 billion of work was done last year. And it was wind farms. It was natural gas. It was upgrades to our coal plants, perhaps. But it's just, we're sitting in a very good place in North Dakota with really low-cost electricity, which transcends to a lot of good things. So thanks to your guys up there, Jim, we keep doing that. So thanks a lot.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Suppose Jim will want a raise now. Good work, Jim. Make sure you tell the
fellas. Turn one down.
RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-14-19, canceling facility-based grain buyer license numbers 2180 and 2048, respectively issued to CHS Incorporated of St. Paul, Minnesota, at the Grafton and Killdeer, North Dakota locations, and ordering that business at Grafton and Killdeer is discontinued effective immediately.
Second.
The licensing division received a request to discontinue business from CHS for its facilities at Grafton and Killdeer. These facilities were operated under facility-based grain buyer licenses, and CHS Incorporated has closed them. I recommend the request be approved, and I will add that these also had federal licenses too, but we're not aware of any claims or any problems other than just the fact that they have decided to discontinue business.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Daryl, I'd just add some edge dressing on this. This is dealing with a particular grain elevator, but also the three commissioners and staff will be at the Grayman's Convention this next weekend, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And we've had a lot of discussion, quite honestly, with about the grain industry a lot. We had the rail incident in Castleton, which highlighted a lot of energy, but there's been some upward push on prices for rail that's affecting grain elevators that we're trying, and we don't have direct jurisdiction on that, but I know that Commissioner Christman was on the phone just yesterday with BNSF, and we're really tracking a lot of those things dealing with the farming and ranching industry. So it's just things kind of go in cycles, and I think now we're going to be spending a lot more of our time, and it's a good thing, on making sure that the rail facilities are available with the right cost for our shippers the best we can. Rail safety is going to continue to be an issue. And also, too, is getting these products to market as different rules come into play for lots of different things. So I think that I'm looking forward to the Grainman's Convention this weekend. I know that we'll all be there. Isn't Sue have a panel on Monday afternoon, too, I believe? Mm-hmm. So where the PSC is also going to be presenting there. So.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner. I see our attorney is now in the room, so get back to work.
Carry on.
All right, Commissioner Fedorchak.
I think I have the lightest portfolio I've ever had during a commission meeting, so maybe it's a little celebratory from the last meeting where we gutted out a whole bunch of things.
I'm glad we had that meeting last couple
weeks ago. I move the commission issue a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, and notice of opportunity for hearing in the joint application of Cass County Electric Cooperative, Inc. and the City of Valley City for approval of a service area agreement to establish and designate service locations to be served by Cass Electric and the city in and around Valley City, North Dakota, case number PU-13-898.
Second.
On December 16th, Cass County Electric and the City of Valley City filed a joint application for approval of a service area agreement to establish service areas and designate service locations to be served by Cass Electric in Valley City within and around Valley City in Barnes County, North Dakota. This order or motion announces that we will be holding an informal hearing on this matter to begin on February 12th at 1:30 p.m. in the Commission Hearing Room. And comments and requests for a formal hearing must be received by February 28th of 2014 from anybody who is interested in getting involved in this matter. Really, what this is, neither of these entities are jurisdictional to the Public Service Commission, but the service area agreement is. And so really what they've done, according to the map, is established sort of an agreement on some areas that are south and east of the city in terms of who will be providing electric service to those areas. Really appreciate the cooperation that's at the heart of this and all of these types of agreements. This is a really much more productive and efficient way to handle things. And especially in this case where it's a municipal, like the city-owned electric provider, they are working cooperatively with their nearby co-op to make sure that they aren't unnecessarily duplicating the infrastructure to serve customers in their areas. And they may or may not had to have done that, but they did, and it's a good thing for their customers that they're serving. So appreciate that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just a little more, I guess, more background on this. If this is approved, eventually this would be the 17th service area agreement that the commission has approved. And the goes back to the first one the commission approved was in 2007. I guess that would have been what was filed. I'm not sure exact approval date. But going back to Capital Electric and MDU in the Bismarck area, very contentious service area agreement. But it really got worked out, and it really provided a template, I think, for a lot of these other agreements. And I want to thank the investor-owns and the co-ops and the munis for following through with this, because we've had in 2007, 8, 9, there was roughly about two a year. And then in 2012, there was five. 2013, this would be three. So we've really tried to push the companies to work with each other to define their service areas before it becomes contentious. Because we just saw something on consent about that was withdrawn for a hearing, but it's really much better for the investor owns, the munis, the co-ops to come to some agreement before it becomes controversial. And we don't want any overbuilding in the state that would violate our TIA statute. I just think it's really important that the companies get together and work this out, because we can keep those costs down for everybody. And this is a very, very good move by Cass County as well as the city of Valley City, because that would be the western edge of their region. So it's that's been an area that's growing as well. So look forward to the opportunity for a hearing on this.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company's application for its renewable resource cost recovery adjustment factor, case number PU-14-14.
Second.
On December 31st, Otter Tail Power Company filed a request for approval of its 2013 renewable resource cost recovery adjustment factor for recovering costs associated with its wind farms. The proposal would reduce the current factor from 0.00518 per kilowatt hour to 0.00440 for a decrease of approximately 57 cents per month for a typical residential customer. Comments and requests for a hearing must be received by February 28th on this matter. This rider was approved by an order in 2008 by the commission. And it was originally approved so that Otter Tail could recover costs for its Langdon Wind Project. And then in 2009, the Ashtabula Wind Project was added. And then the Laverne Wind Project, which I believe is in southern Minnesota. Is that correct? Laverne?
Isn't that the Langdon one? No, it's by Laverne, North Dakota.
Laverne. Oh, there's one in... Okay. That was added in 2010. And it's basically a mechanism for these for Otter Tail to recover the cost of these wind projects, which have a higher initial cost. And now, as we see, having had this for a few years, the costs are going down, and customers will see a decrease in their overall cost for this rider.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. I'll just go through some events coming up. We have an event next Wednesday. I talked about the Greymans Convention. Next Wednesday, January 22nd, we have a climate symposium. I'll turn it over to Commissioner Podorchak and Crispin when I get done, because they're taking most of the work organizing this, quite honestly. Looking past that, we've got a formal hearing next Thursday about the rate case that is still in front of us from NSP. We also have hearings on January 28th in the McKenzie County area, specifically Watford City, with more of the Lonesome Creek Station. We have a work session coming up, which will be very interesting, on Basin Electric's 345 kV power line. The commission held hearings on that last year. We received the draft EIS, so that kind of gives us a viewpoint of what the federal folks think about the power lines. So I look forward to that work session as we continue to move that project down the road. We have coming up some very big hearings. The Sandpiper line will be having three different hearings, one in Grand Forks on February 19th, 8:30 at the law school, one the next day, February 20th, at Lake Region State College in Devil's Lake, and then the following week will be in Minot for the last hearing on the Enbridge one at the Minot City Council Chambers. So the last year was busy, this year starting off with a bang as well. So I don't have any other comments, but I'd turn it over to my colleagues. I'm pretty sure you have more about the symposium.
Do you want to go first, Randy?
We have a press release, I believe, coming out on that.
Yep.
Did you distribute that one?
Yep. Okay. And the agenda is attached.
Okay. And so just to say that, you know, the whole subject of climate change and carbon regulations and that sort of thing, it's a very serious concept on its own, but the level of uncertainty that swirls around is probably as serious as what the realities will ultimately be, because as rumors are floating around and things, people are reluctant, and so even though we're not going to know exactly what EPA or the administration is ultimately going to do, we can at least get up to the moment information out there, and I think that'll be very useful. And also, you know, we have experts coming in on, you know, from EPA, experts coming in that can tell us more about how these things are going to impact them, what to expect. There'll be public comment. I think it'll be a very valuable day for us as a commission, but also for the public in general to learn more about what's going on and what to expect and what to anticipate and what to be concerned about.
I would echo Commissioner Christman's comments in terms of the goals of this. Really, I see it as kind of a fact-finding mission as much as we can at this point. We'll have EPA here to talk about facts on their process, their timelines, some of the proposals that are already out there, and some of the things that they're considering, both on the existing source, because there's two sources of regulations coming here. One for all the plants that exist today, and that's the newer, those regulations are not as far along in terms of development and regulations for new plants. So the new plant regulations, those proposals are further along. And so the EPA will be here talking about where they are in the process of both of those, what exactly is being proposed at this point, and what the timelines are moving forward, and how the public can get involved. So I think that clarity will be really welcome from people in government, people in the industry, and hopefully citizens as well, in terms of what exactly the process is and how we can stay involved in it and on top of it. Secondly, all the utilities will be there talking about how proposed and potential regulations will impact their operations, how it might impact plants that exist, how they will respond, and what kind of impacts ultimately those could have on customers. And then thirdly, I'm really excited about this component. We have an expert from the North American Electric Reliability Commission called NERC, but that's what it stands for. These are the folks that are responsible for making sure, ultimately, that when you turn on your lights, you have power. They're all about reliability. They have studied nationwide and have done a lot of studies in California where a large number of renewable resources have been integrated. And they've looked at it and studied it and tried to determine what are the impacts that renewables have. How do they function differently than traditional power sources and generation sources? And they have learned a lot and will offer a lot of comments in terms of how you can implement these, at what pace, and provide some perspective, I think, in terms of what's realistic in timelines for incorporating and really changing our electric power supplies. So I guess the way I see it, These EPA carbon regulations stand to fundamentally change one of the pillars of our economy, and that's our electricity. And so any changes to how our electricity system is designed and developed need to be very thoughtful, deliberate, done in public. They need to be realistic in terms of their time frame based on, you know, good available science and the realities of our how our system is designed. And hopefully done on a, you know, regional or more global basis so that everyone's going down this path together. So I think that's kind of where we're going with this conference. It's a full day. We tried to make it shorter, but quite honestly, this is a really technical subject, and it deserves a full day's attention. So we decided to just go for it and use a full day. And also, importantly, there is opportunity for the public to make comments as well. At the end of the morning session, we did it over the noon hour, so if people need to leave their work or whatever, they can do so in an easy way. And so from approximately 11:30 till 12:30 or 1, we will be taking public comment.
And the last thing, you know, a number of people from the agency have put a lot of work into organizing all this and trying to figure out an agenda where various people get proper amounts of time, and yet we don't drag it on forever either. But especially Sarah Cardwell has really spent a lot of time on this. I want to thank her.
Thanks, Sarah. I'm involved in, as my colleagues are too, but I've been involved for quite a while with the MARC, the Midwest Regulatory Group, and the National Group. And one of the things that I've noticed is a sea change inside those groups is that my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, some of what I'd call the good blue dog Democrats, are really, which they maybe were for CO2 regulation in the beginning, I've noticed a change that they're less likely to support some of this now because the whole reliability issue is becoming a big concern. I was talking with my colleagues just in Texas this last weekend. The Midwest region is showing up to 8 gigawatts short of power, and nationally we could be up to 68 gigawatts short of power. And so even those people that are 100% for CO2 regulation, which I'm not one of them, but even those that are for it are now concerned about reliability. And this last cold snap we had, it went all the way from North Dakota to Texas to the East Coast. And there was some really close areas not being able to meet some of their demands. So I think what with the Commissioner Fedorchak talking about getting the NERC officials up here, I think is going to be a new component to this discussion. There's always been the cost component. You know, some folks are saying, hey, listen, we're willing to pay whatever it takes to do it. But now I think that the reliability component is really becoming a bigger issue to what's available to the grid. So that's a new thing that I haven't seen to this level, and I look forward to the setup and thank Julie and Randy for doing the lion's share work on this, getting the speakers coming in, because we've got the right people, the health department, we've got the technology experts, we've got the EPA, we've got the companies, we've got the public. I think it's a good setup. And then what I would envision as a deliverable, we take in all this information, and then the commission decides, okay, what are we going to do with it? I think that at a bare minimum, we'll file comments to the EPA proposed rules, which that 60-day period, I think, started last week. So we've got some period of time to get those comments in there. I would envision a letter to the delegation. And I've talked to our colleagues in South Dakota, into Wyoming, into Minnesota, into Iowa, trying to get other public service commissioners perhaps to join in with us and send letters to all these different groups, because ultimately this is a, you know, it's a decision the administration will make, but the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House have got bills in there that will do different things. So I think that's the point of, for us, for me, you know, building support, not just in North Dakota, but throughout the region on both sides of the political aisle to show that these CO2 rules are perhaps not the right thing at this particular time. Okay. Anything else, Commissioner Fedorchak?
I don't have anything else.
All right. We'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
I have a curiosity just with the Cass County and City of Valley City. Is this the first time you've been involved with a municipal power?
Yes.
One of those things?
Yep.
That is correct. We had three cases where it was co-op versus co-op, if you will, but this is the first in a muni.
Is there anything unusual about doing it with a muni versus a co-op versus an IOU? Or is it?
I don't see anything.
Not in my discussions with staff. I don't think that there is. Is there, Jerry? That's the one difference, but
so are these annexed areas or newly annexed areas of Valley City, or do you know? Or?
I don't know if they have been officially annexed into the city boundaries. I can't tell by the map that they provided. It's on the south side of the interstate, south and east of kind of where you think of Valley City being.
On the symposium, you're not so that there may be, you know, people on the other side are probably saying, oh, you're just doing this to bring FERC up here to beat up on them. You're not doing that. This is more of an information gathering thing.
For me, it is. Yeah, absolutely.
Clearly, that's why we're starting it out with someone from EPA to explain what is real and what, you know, as opposed to what might be just rumors floating around.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So if you have to mark the FERC with NERC, do you need an ARC?
That's correct. ASAP.
Yeah. I had to. I'm sorry.
Just don't start talking about PERPA.
Or PHMSA. Or anything else. You said you say
or
it so far.
We might have to SMACRA if you do.
That's right. Not like I've been smackered before. So, $1 billion last year, 2013. Given what you've seen or what you're hearing on the horizon so far, what's your prediction for 2014, if you can make one? Do you expect this pace to continue? Or
I would say at least that, because the Enbridge project alone is $400 million?
Oh, it's $600 million.
$600 million.
$300 in North Dakota, $300 in Minnesota,
right.
Roughly. It's roughly half in North Dakota. I think so, Dave. What's been interesting is that, you know, I look back at 2009 was a big wind year, and then 2010 was a little wind, and then we got into some gas plants, and then 11 was kind of pipelines, and then 12. So this year it's kind of like the wind is positioned, I think, to continue with some projects that are going to be perhaps approved. We've got a whole bunch of, we've got a whole slate of projects in front of us with Xcel Energy right now that are ADPs, and so you've got the wind projects. The natural gas, I think, is the big variable. We don't cite natural gas projects as far as the interstate, but we do a lot of the work with the companies like One Oak. So I think gas is the big variable, but I would anticipate the pace to continue. And the whole discussion about the rail facilities, that may spawn a whole bunch more pipelines. I just had a meeting yesterday with a pipeline company that would love to build a bunch of pipelines if the Keystone XL line is built. And so that Keystone XL line might be the hook, if you will, that could really get that next surge of pipeline growth in North Dakota.
Yeah, and there's several gas processing projects that we might see and expansions, some additional generation facilities. The transmission line will ultimately, that wasn't counted in this year's, so the transmission line would be in next year's, the 345 kV. You've got the Enbridge pipeline. The Bakken Link is working on a pipeline project to extend north from where they currently serve across the lake. Another huge project. So, you know, I think last year it was $1.3 billion. This year it was $1 billion. I would expect that we will definitely exceed the $1 billion mark in the coming year.
Those two projects alone are $600 million, aren't they? Just two of projects.
Yeah. So, you know, the last year's project, in $1 billion in total estimated value of those projects, it included a gas-fired generation station, 100 miles of pipelines, three wind farms, and those were the main projects included last year. So it was, you know, what we're seeing for next year already kind of exceeds those in terms of value.
There's still the delta of 2,000 megawatts short of power in the Northwest right now. And most of that is based in electrics, but MDU has a big chunk of it. And so the investment that's going to somehow reach that need of 2,000 megawatts is still out there. And I don't know exactly how that's all going to play out, but it's going to have to be a combination of gas and moving to coal-fired power and maybe some wind. So that those deadlines are coming closer as to what's going to have to be built.
That reminds me of the 68 gigawatts that the country could be short. Is that the right figure?
68 gigawatts is the number that Edison Electric just released yesterday. And I got that email from, I'm going to be the incoming chair of the National Clean Coal Group, and we're tracking that really closely. And it's interesting because that group, they want to spawn the right technologies to capture the CO2, and they want to use it for oil development. So it's there's this synergy developing of folks that want to capture CO2 for other uses, not just capture it because. And so as the technology piece comes together, that's the piece where we've got the individual from Rice University coming up here, Charles McConnell, to talk about where the technologies are at. And Randy's been up to the plant up in Canada. I've been down to the one in Mississippi. And there's a desire for this CO2 out there. It's just how can you get it cost effective? And quite honestly, I'm just throwing this out there because it's tangent things I'm working on with others, but the Department of Energy is looking for places to do test sites for this. And so I've thrown in the North Dakota that, hey, we could do this right up here. And our delegation, both the senators, are tracking that a little bit too. So who knows what might develop out of some of this. So I think it's the short term of, okay, let's not put a bunch of things on out there as rules and regulations that there's no technology for, but long term, let's figure out how to use the coal, maybe use the CO2 for something else, and you can get a win-win across the board. I mean, that's the way I see it playing out in my mind. Others would disagree with that on both sides, but I think that's where we'll kind of get to.
On the carbon capture and enhanced oil recovery, that's an issue that we've talked about doing another symposium just on that, and I think that you can stay tuned for something similar to the carbon symposium just on that issue down the road.
I wanted, before we got too far away from it, to get back to the billion-dollar mark. You know, in the legislature years ago when we were doing some tax incentives and that sort of thing, like for the Tesoro refinery upgrade and some of the power plant upgrades, the rule of thumb kind of was on these big projects that are tens or hundreds of millions of dollars that about half was labor and half was other costs. And I don't know, I suppose these different projects, whether it's a wind farm or a pipeline or a power line, they vary a lot. But that's where I'm getting the number of half and half from. If you look at $1 billion worth of infrastructure approvals, not only does the state benefit from having that infrastructure in the ground and doing what it's made to be doing, but in a year's time, that $1 billion would be $500 million of labor costs, which equates to $100,000 per year workers. That's a lot of difference in the economy of this state and even the states around us. So,
and tax revenue. And yeah. I, in talking with Bakken Link yesterday, too, they talked about just the rail industry and how that has spawned economic development in other regions. Like there's this plant in Longview, Texas, that makes a bulk of the cars, and they're just working 24/7, created a lot of new jobs down there. And American homegrown business development, this energy play isn't just enhancing the economy in North Dakota. It's having an impact throughout the whole country. It's really exciting to see people being able to find good work and to support their family and their communities. It's just the way our country is supposed to work.
I had a group yesterday stop my office. It's Organized Labor Group out of Minnesota and North Dakota that deal with pipelines. And they came in and they wanted to know the procedure to come to the Enbridge hearings and say what they thought about it. And this group is out of Minnesota and they want their people to work. And so I suspect they're going to come to our hearings. I suspect they're going to go to Minnesota's procedure. But, you know, normally wouldn't see that. But people want to get to work in all the states around here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything? Nick, you got anything?
How likely do you think how concerned are you about these regulations actually passing as is? The track record of the administration before, some of these initiatives haven't really come to fruition, gone to a conclusion. How concerned are you that these would actually end up ultimately passing as they are, anywhere similar to what they are?
Nick, I'm very concerned because you think back to the administration tried cap and trade, and they did not get the support in the House and the Senate, so we thought perhaps that was dead. But now that the president has taken the EPA and basically just turned them loose. And so the resolve of the current administration to regulate CO2 is very strong. And so I think that the reliability component is the new piece that has spawned support on both sides of the aisle that this perhaps is too much too quick. So I'm more confident now than I was a few months ago that there's a possibility of staving this off just because the reliability discussion has moved to the forefront. Now it's not so much the cost, it's this could hurt the grid. And that's why I think it'll play out. But if we weren't very concerned, we wouldn't be having this symposium.
And I would add to that, you know, the president talked in 2007 or 2008 before he was president about breaking the coal companies. I don't think there's ever been an administration that has been more anxious to bypass Congress and do things with executive orders. And the EPA has already come out with the new carbon rules for new plants. And frankly, they're unachievable. The level of carbon capture that is required, there's the facility at Mississippi and the one in Canada that's under construction to try on a small scale to do this, but there is not that technology even in existence yet to do what would be necessary to build a new coal plant now. So I think that the new regulations on existing plants are not they are something that need to be taken very seriously.
I don't think the question is a matter of if, it's when. And I think efforts like this are an attempt to gather as much information as we can in hopes of making any potential regulations that do pass as workable and as reasonable and achievable as possible. Randy mentioned a lot of regulations have already been passed. They're implemented. They're being, the companies are abiding by them today. And so it isn't a matter of if it's when. And I think my hope is that with a reasonable discussion that you can temper some of the extremes on both sides of this issue and set out a time frame that isn't, 2020, but might be 2040, 2050, that follows some of the more natural retirements of these generation facilities, and also, most importantly, allows the technology to develop so that we can find a viable way to use our incredible coal resources and maintain that very valuable industry that employs hundreds of thousands of people in this country long term, and we can achieve both. We can capture the carbon, use it in an effective way, and still have coal-fired power that is affordable and reliable in this country. So I think that's what my goal is in this whole conversation. The reality today, and Randy touched on this earlier, is even just the discussion of these regulatory proposals has had an incredible effect on the industry. And the uncertainty has provided certainty in some ways. It has provided certainty that no coal is being built today because you don't know what the regulations are going to be. And not knowing that, the companies, generation companies are picking different choices. So I think it's important to get this conversation going and get the regulations created so that you can get rid of this uncertainty, provide some long-term certainty for the entire electric sector. The other problem with this issue is that there isn't any stopgap on the creation of these regulations. You've got the courts, which these things will be duked out in court long-term, and you have Congress. And right now, Congress is so divided that they can't come up. The House could pass something. It won't pass the Senate. And so you've got, basically on the policy-making body of this country where these types of issues should be determined and set, you aren't having any action. And so our congressional delegation is working hard, but they can only do so much with Harry Reid in charge of the U.S. Senate and intent on blocking any sort of reasonable energy policy discussion long term.
Not to take up all the time, but just keep rolling, I guess. The natural gas availability has been part of this discussion, too. It's interesting that the coal groups lost a lot of support with low-cost natural gas, because you see the utility companies now have this perception that there's going to be low-cost gas forever. So that's a big concern that I would have, is that, let's suppose you want to transition coal to natural gas, and if the cost of gas stays at $3 forever, that's one thing, but the ability of gas to stay low, that's the big question. And so gas availability, all this about how we're using our resources, it's going to be big. And the whole Yucca Mountain debate on nuclear power, we talked about that a lot at the symposium, that, you know, the same groups that don't want any CO2 in the atmosphere at all, they're against nuclear power, which is zero CO2 emissions. So it's just part of this whole piece. And thank Randy and Julie for getting this set up, and Sarah, because I think it's important to educate the public about what's going on, because eventually, if we don't do our job on this front end, we're going to be asked to pass some big rate increases to the customers. That's, I go back to what we're lobbying for, is the consumers to not have 30-cent a kilowatt power someday.
The person who can have a huge difference from a North Dakota standpoint, I believe, is Heidi Heitkamp, because she has relationships with Democrat colleagues in the Senate, which is sort of the blocking point right now. And if she can gather some like-minded folks on her side and get enough votes to join the Republicans to and provide a more reasonable pathway forward on this issue, we could get a lot done. And she also has relationships with the administration and can work on that side of things from a regulatory standpoint quite effectively. So I think Senator Heitkamp has a really influential role to play in this discussion moving forward.
And when you guys were talking about fact versus rumor or whatnot, I wonder if maybe anybody could kind of elaborate on what you mean by that.
Right now, I don't know myself what exact the numeric standards are, what the timelines are. You hear from one source it's X part per million at some year. There's just so much different numbers in reporting and time frames. Each state has their state implementation plan of what they have to do. Some states are different. I mean, it's just, I don't know what the exact timelines are or numeric standards that the EPA is really considering and how that might tie into North Dakota. Because there could be differences in states in this, I've heard, in the EPA plan. If North Dakota's got lignite coal, it might be a different standard than Wyoming, who's got the Powder River Basin coal. So I think, Nick, it's finding out what straight out of the horse's mouth, what the standards and time frames as they would affect North Dakota are.
Go ahead. The news source is a source of confusion, if you want to take one example. They drafted the rules in, like, September, and then there's been this public comment period. And then they published new rules or a new version of the rules just last week. And so I want to know, are these final now? Are these still proposed? Is there still opportunity to change them? What exactly is the status of what was proposed last week? And quite honestly, we've visited with Sean McGrath, who's the Region 8 administrator who's going to be here, and he wasn't even sure when we talked to him the other day what the status of those rules are. So there is an incredible amount of confusion that exists out there in terms of just the process alone, and that doesn't even get into the 2 inches worth of proposed regulations that you have to get through to try to understand what it is that they want to do.
Even things with just unclear definitions, you know, if someone can sit and burn some coal on their desk with a Bunsen burner and capture the emissions, you know, is that commercially available then, when we're talking about plants that burn hundreds of tons of coal every day? You know, and I've heard EPA refer to things that are commercially available that the coal people tell me is not commercially available. And so these are the kinds of another kind of thing that we need clarity on.
The three-dimensional chess game would even suggest that they want the ambiguity out there as long as they can, maybe in the EPA, because if Company X said, you know what, we want to build a new plant and here's the new standard, they could build it towards that potentially. Without the standard being known, nobody's even talking about it because the target changes all the time. That was when I was down in Meridian. That was some of their frustration, as they built a $3 billion plant to meet a certain standard that was told it would be the new standard. And now with these new rules, it might be lower than what they've spent all this money on. So it's just kind of interesting what's going on out there.
So it's more about technical talk, not about anything like word on the street, urban myth, anything like that. It's more about getting the actual numbers, more technical-wise, so that it filters down. People are more knowledgeable on what...
I would see it that way. Yeah.
I think a lot of it's technical, but there are some other just word on the street kinds of things, too. Let's say EPA clarifies their rules. Are we talking about something that goes into effect immediately? Or for any new plants built after 2025? Or I don't know. And, you know, those things are very simple to understand, but have so far never been clarified that I'm aware of.
Okay. Nick, anything else?
That's basically what I was looking for.
All right, Dave?
I'm good.
All right, did we miss anything for the good of the team? All right, I don't have any closing comments. Commissioner Fedorchak, any?
Nope.
Andy?
None.
All right, we'll go ahead and close the regular meeting, and let's go ahead and start at 10 after 11 for the administrative portion.